Well, you're all looking very blissful, and let us pray that the bliss simply increases more and more, so that the bliss will overflow . The whole world will be overflooded with the bliss of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. So this bliss of Krishna consciousness is not like the bliss of drinking wine or taking any other kind of intoxication. This is the... can you do? Okay. Please do it. It is the pure bliss of the soul in the constitutional position of service to Krishna, loving service to Krishna. Devotional service means loving service to Krishna. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the very form of Krishna, literary form of Krishna. Just as Krishna is rasamai, he is full of ras, he is ras, raso vai saha, he is rasa. So Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna and is overflowing with the bliss of Krishna and devotional service, bhakti, which is the relationship of the devotees with Krishna and Krishna with his devotees. So in the last few years I've been discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first verse, and I will attempt to continue to do so this year also. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Those who know the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam can chant it with me. Janmadhyasya yatonvayat itaratas charteshva vignya swarat tene brahma yahridaya adikavaye muhyanti yat suryaha tejo vari mridang yatha vinimayo yatra trisargo mrsha dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyang parang dhimahi. I made a mistake in the second line, I'll chant it again. Janmadhyasya yaton vayad itaratas charteshva vignya swarat tene brahma hridaya adikavaye muhyanti yat suryaha tejo vari mridang yatha vinimayo yatra trisargo mrsha dhamna svena sada nirasta kuhakam satyang parang dhimahi. This is the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I suggest and request that you all learn this. It's such an important verse. We are attempting to cultivate bhakti to Krishna. This verse is Vyasadeva's definition of who is Krishna, the Absolute Truth, Krishna, upon whom we are to meditate. This first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, it completely knocks out every attempt at philosophy by everyone, both Occidental and Oriental. Oriental philosophy, what does that mean? Well, there's Vedic philosophy, attempted interpretations of the Vedas, and there are other These are the Astic philosophers, those who believe in the Vedas. They're called Astic. And then Gnostic, which is a word nowadays translated as atheistic. There are philosophers like the Buddhists and the Jains who are influenced by the Vedic teachings, although they claim not to accept them. Anyway, there are various philosophies which have been propagated, are being propagated, and will be propagated throughout the world. But this first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam defines Satyam Param, the supreme reality. Or in modern English philosophical terms, the absolute truth. Mostly philosophy, the speculative philosophy, it reaches its zenith in postulating the absolute or the supreme as impersonal. Generally, even those who are supposedly theists, those who consider themselves on the higher level, the intellectual level. How about writing it in lowercase? Small letters like we do that. I mean, that's the BBT standard, isn't it? The intellectuals or the enlightened ones among those who profess to believe in God, they ultimately come to an impersonal realization. So Srila Prabhupada's books, we all hear a lot about the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books in the next few days. No doubt, Manidha Prabhu is coming. So just like we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Shonak Rishi says to Suta Goswami that Parikshit Maharaj was a great devotee from his birth, and Shukadev Goswami was the topmost devotee, so when they met there must have been discussion of Krishna. So similarly, Manidha Prabhu is coming and he has an audience of devotees, so definitely there's going to be talk about book distribution. So these books are being distributed, Srila Prabhupada's books are being distributed, and they give clear knowledge of the ultimate reality, or the only reality, who is Krishna. And this first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, anyone who's got even an inkling of philosophical interest can immediately understand, if they read this, that this far surpasses anything that they've ever come across in all their miserable lives. And it's just completely in a different category to anything else that passes in the name of religion or philosophy. And that's only the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, this first verse of Bhagavatam opens with the second aphorism of Vedanta Sutra, which describes the supreme truth. The first aphorism is no atato brahma jignasa. Now we should or there should be inquiry into Brahma, the nature of reality. What is that Brahma? Janmadyasya yataha. So I discussed this in some detail previously, and then some detail. I mean, there's no end. This first verse of Bhagavatam can be discussed unlimitedly. So, Vyasadeva gives his own commentary on who is this, or what is this? Yataha. It's not this. Yataha can mean from whom or from which. So, Shankaracharya defines this ultimate source of everything. Jamadhyasa yataha means that from which everything is produced, that in which everything rests, that in which everything exists, and that into which everything ultimately enters. This is the version of the Taittiriya Upanishad. So, Shankaracharya interprets this as impersonal, and that's in his Sharirka Bhasya, or Brahma Sutra Bhasya. The same message is given throughout the works of Shankaracharya, and just to give you an idea of the kind of pure poison for the soul that Shankaracharya has expounded, I'll read from one of Shankaracharya's most famous works, the Vivek Churamani. Vivek means discrimination. So his process is by discrimination. The very name of the work means that one applies one's own intelligence. Of course, he's applying his intelligence and asking people to take that. He's directing how to apply your discrimination. And churamani, it means literally the decoration on the head. So it means the topmost jewel of discrimination. So in this work of his, I'll just read a short section and then you can all go and vomit outside and then come back and get some nectar to soothe your aching souls after hearing this. This is a translation by a Western scholar. It's actually, I mean, if you listen to the Sanskrit, it sounds very sweet, actually. I mean, the nature of Sanskrit is that if you follow the poetic rules, which there are many of them, you cannot but produce good poetry. Of course, there are famous poets, among whom Vyasadeva, and particularly the Srimad Bhagavatam, is widely lauded as, even among mundane scholars, as being a excellent work of poetry. So anyway, here is Vivek Churamani. Of course, it is possible to read this in a personal way also, but the way it is accepted in Shankara's Sampradaya, I'll read the translation. Okay, here's a verse. Verse 237. Atath param brahma sat advitiyam vishuddha vijnana ghanam niranjanam prashantam adyanta vihinam akriyam nirantarananda rasa swarupam. There exists only the Supreme God. The translator said God, although the word is not there in the Sanskrit. The one reality without a second, consisting of pure consciousness. What is God? What is the highest reality? Pure consciousness. Without any blemish. Peace itself and without beginning or end. Actionless and having the nature of pure bliss. Nirasta mayakrita sarvabhedam nityam sukham nishkalam aprameyam arupam. Favorite word of the Mayavadis. Arupam avyaktam, another favorite word of theirs. Anakyam avyayam jyoti, another favorite word. Swayam kinchid idam chakasti. Beyond all delusion-created distinctions. All distinctions are created by illusion. I am you and you are me. If someone comes and says this, then invite him to lunch and make a big plate and sit down and eat it all in front of him. So he'll say, what about feeding me? I said, you are me? I just fed you. It's not very practical. So beyond all delusion created distinctions, this whatever, indefinable, shines by its own light, eternal, fulfilled, indivisible, infinite, formless, inexpressible, nameless, and indestructible. Now, an important point of the Mayavadi's philosopher. Jatri jaya jana shunyam anantam nirvikalpam kevala khanda chinmatram parang tatvam vidur buddhaha. That kevala, that's another favorite word of the Mayavadis, akhanda, they like these terms. So, jnatri jnaya jnana shunyam, there's no difference between the knower, the known, or the object of knowledge, between knowledge, the object of knowledge, and the knower, there's no difference. Those who are intelligent, they know this supreme reality, free from the distinctions of knower, and knowledge, infinite, complete in itself, and consisting of pure awareness, chinmatra, pure awareness. This chinmatra term also comes in Srimad Bhagavatam, but that refers to Bhagavan. Okay, just one more verse, then you can all go and vomit. Naheyam anupadeyam mano vacham agocharam aprameya manadyantam brahma purnam ahang mahaha. What cannot be discarded, I'm just doing my own translation, or grasped beyond the sphere of mind and speech, then what are you talking about? Beyond the sphere of mind and speech, measureless and beginning and endless is Brahma, one's true self and supreme glory. Tat tvam asi, you are that. So here's a different, it's not very inspiring, is it? I mean, the Mayavadis might get inspired by that. But here's something from Jiva Goswami. It's great, this is a great relief to listen to this. From Bhagavad Sandarbha, which is all the Sandarbhas are the Tattva Sandarbha, of course, is establishing the position of Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate pramana or source of evidence, and then the other Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami explain, based on the Bhagavatam, the nature of Bhagavan, who is the Supreme, the Personal, Supreme Personality of Godhead, the nature of Bhakti, the nature of Krishna, the nature of Paramatma, and the nature of love. So here from Bhagavad Sandarbha, which is a discussion of the nature of God, it's all based on its classified and codified statements, analyzed statements from the Srimad Bhagavatam about the nature of Bhagavan. So this goes far beyond anything imagined in the religions of the so-called religions of the world. And really, it's only a matter of just, surely if we go on distributing these books, at some point in time, people are going to wake up and see, I mean, what is, this is so valuable. And these so-called religions of the world, either the Catholic or the Christian religion, or these modern hodgepodge Mayavadi concoctions, they're all so completely shallow and insubstantial compared to Bhagavad Gita as it is and Srimad Bhagavatam. Like I say, this first verse of Bhagavatam is in itself, just reading this is enough to completely knock out everything else that goes in the name of religion or philosophy all over the world. So let's hear from Bhagavat Sandarbha. It's from Jiva Goswami. What I'm going to read is one sentence. It's long. Tadevam sachid anandaika rupa swarupa bhuta chincha vichrananta shakti yukto dharmatva eva dharmitvam nirbhedatva eva nana bhedavatvam arupitva eva rupitvam vyapakatva eva madhyamatvam satyam eva tyadi paraspara viruddhananta gunanidhi sthula sukshma vilakshana swaprakasha khanda swaswarupa bhuta shri vigrahastatha bhuta bhagavad akya mukhyaika vigraha vyanjita tadrisha ananta vigrahastadrisha swanu rupa shaktyavi bhava lakshana lakshmi ranjita vamangsha swaprabha Visheshakara parichada parika nijadhamasu virajamana kara swarupa shakti vilasa lakshana adbhuta guna liladi chamatkarita maramadi gano nija samanya prakashakara brahma tatvo nijashayaika jivana jivaka tathasta shakti rananta prapancha vyanjita swabhasa swabhava shakti guno bhagavan iti. Bhagavan iti means this is Bhagavan. So that was a sentence describing who is Bhagavan. And here's a translation, or the translation. Who is Bhagavan? This is based on Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. He who is the very form of existence, consciousness and bliss, who possesses inconceivable... You see, the Mayavadis say inconceivable also. But they say that the ultimate is totally inconceivable. The absolute truth is ultimately inconceivable. Whereas the Vaishnavas accept that the qualities of Bhagavan are inconceivable. There's a difference, isn't there? The qualities of Bhagavan, the existence of Bhagavan is not inconceivable. So, who possesses inconceivable, multifarious and unlimited energies that are of his own nature. Shakti, shakti matara bhedaha. The energy and the energetic are non-different. Who is the ocean of unlimited, mutually contradictory qualities, such that in him both the attribute and the possessor of attributes, the lack of differences and varieties of differences, formlessness and form, pervasiveness and centrality, madhyamatva, pervasiveness and being situated in one place, all are true, whose beautiful form, oh, isn't that a relief after hearing Shankaracharya? Whose beautiful form, Krishna. There he is. There's so many pictures of Krishna. Huh? Here we have Krishna. Whose beautiful form is distinct from both gross and subtle entities, self-luminous and consisting entirely of his own nature, who has unlimited such forms that are manifested by his chief form called Bhagavan, whose left side is beautified by Lakshmi, the manifestation of his personal energy suitable to his own form, who resides in his own abode along with his associates who are furnished with a form that is a special manifestation of his own splendor. who astonishes the hosts of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in the self, by his wonderful qualities, pastimes, etc., which are characterized by the play of his personal energy, whose own generic brilliance is manifested in the form of the reality of Brahman, who is the sole shelter and life of his marginal energy, called the living entities, jivas, whose mere reflected energy are the modes of nature, gunas, visible in the unlimited phenomenal world. He is Bhagavan. So that's a lot for us to all digest, especially after, on a hot day, you're trying to digest a big meal of prasadam. But this is digestible. This is nectar. This is the tonic. This is satyam param dhimahi. When Vyasadeva says satyam param dhimahi, he doesn't mean this. Generally we think of meditation as some kind of impersonal merging of the individual consciousness with the cosmic consciousness. But to meditate on the supreme reality means to meditate on the name, form, qualities, pastimes, energies, associates, etc., of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this point is established by Vyasadeva in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, that the Supreme, who the impersonalists, who got galvanized by, got their act going with Shankaracharya, but Shankaracharya is not the, we say Adi Shankaracharya, but he wasn't the first impersonalist by any means. The Srimad Bhagavatam, being a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, establishes the Supreme Truth as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, throughout the Bhagavatam. And although the casual reader may not be aware of it, throughout the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva is refuting various theories, erroneous theories about the nature of the Param Satya, the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Reality, and establishing Shadaishvarya Purna Satyadananda Vigraha Krishna. Krishna, the possessor of six main opulences, whose form is eternal, full of bliss and knowledge. Establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and everyone else as dependent upon him, subordinate to him, and various contradictions that arise from that. Much of bhakti arises from the contradiction or the inconceivability of the vastly unlimited Supreme Lord extending his mercy to the infinitesimal, the infinitely powerful Supreme Lord extending his mercy and acting as if equal or even subordinate to the infinite jiva. So that from this springs bhakti rasa. Bhakti rasa, that is yat chamatkara bhara bhu, that is described yatitya bhavana varma yat chamatkara bhara bhu hridi satvojvale bhadham svadate sa rasomataha. This is the definition of rasa given by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in which the subject is bhakti, the the nectar of bhakti rasa that is distinct from the mundane rasa. So he that is distinct, yes, distinct from the mundane rasa. That's the first in this shloka. The first point is that this bhakti rasa, it is beyond the mundane way of thinking. It's not conceivable from the platform of mundane consciousness. Vyatitya bhavana vatma yas chamatkara bharabhu, which is full of wonder, always heavy with wonder. It's literally heavy with wonder. Krishna consciousness is exciting. Relationships with Krishna are always exciting. There's always amazing, wonderful things going on all the time. That which is heavy with wonder, which appears within the purified heart, that bhakti rasa cannot arise within the heart of persons who are not purified. So this is called rasa. So that rasa, this is the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. The subject is Bhagavan and everything in relationship with Bhagavan. That means his devotees, that means bhakti. That satyam param dhimahi, he who is to be meditated upon, is described in the first verse in a philosophical manner. This subject is the actual subject which Vyasadeva took so much trouble to describe, but had only done so indirectly before, is established in the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam by Vyasadeva. Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu. This is the, in which he declares, this is the actual subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that this is this subject, it's not simply a philosophical analysis, but the nature of Bhagavan is that he is rasamai. So if we are to examine Bhagavan, or if we are to examine the nature of Bhagavan, then it must be apparent that he's not simply a giant cosmic watchmaker. But he is rasamai. He is full of love. He is playful. So this is established in the third verse of Bhagavatam, that this is a rasa shastra. Here, to be relished within is bhakti ras. So the description of abhigya, this word is given here. He is fully conscious. But that full consciousness, that is not as the impersonalist described, only consciousness. The impersonalists postulate that there is only consciousness. The ultimate is only consciousness, with nothing to be conscious of. You see? Was that a laugh that came from you? Yeah, because it's nonsense, isn't it? It's absolute conscious, and there's nothing else. So it can only be conscious of itself, but then anyway, the whole thing's absurd. And if you try and think about it, it drives you crazy. And even if you want to think about it, you have to be crazy anyway. So Srila Vyasadeva has saved us. After offering the certain Upanishads for the impersonalists so they could get off on their trip, although actually all the Upanishads, what is that? Sarve Veda Tatpadam Amananti, all the Vedas, they actually describe Krishna. But the impersonalists have got certain Upanishads which are presented in in indirect language, so they can interpret it in as many indirect ways as they like. But this Srimad Bhagavatam is especially meant for the devotees. Actually, all the shastras are meant for devotees. But particularly, Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam, it is the spotless Purana, and therefore it is very dear to the Vaishnavas. So this first verse of Bhagavatam, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadyasya Yaton Vyad Itaratas Chartesh Abhignya Swarat. That's as far as I got in the last lectures here on this verse. So we can begin, or I'll begin, the next point. There are various points being made here in the first verse. Janmadyasyataha. This is the first point. Second point. Anvayad itaratas chartishu. Third point. Abhigyaswarat. Yeah, the first point, he is the absolute truth is the source of all emanations. Second point is that he is directly. No, Anvayaditaratas Chartesvabhigna, that's the second point, is that he is directly and indirectly aware of everything. And the third point, Swarat, he is independent. So the fourth point, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavya. This means that he, Krishna, enlightened within the heart the original Kavi. Kavi means philosopher, poet, or learned person. So, by him, the original philosopher, namely Brahma, was enlightened within the heart by Vedic knowledge. Now, when we first hear this, we may think, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kaviye. We might think, well, this is translated as, how does Srila Prabhupada translate it? It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. Here Srila Prabhupada has translated Kavi as the original created being in the word-for-word translation, and the original living being in the verse translation, or at least that's how we have it now. So when we hear this, we may think that here the word Brahma means Lord Brahma. But actually here Brahma means Vedic knowledge, and Adi Kaviye means unto Adi Kavi Brahma, the first living being. So it was he who imparted the Vedic knowledge within the heart unto Brahma. And thus, Vedic knowledge was received in this world. How has Vedic knowledge appeared in this world? Well, various ways, in various times. The Vedic knowledge has been imparted by the Lord. Matsya Avatar also spoke Vedic knowledge. Hayagriva Avatar also spoke Vedic knowledge. But at the beginning of the creation, Brahma was enlightened with this knowledge, which fulfills the purpose of the creation. Srila Prabhupada was once in London. I happened to be present when Srila Prabhupada had one. There was a micro, it's in the Science of Self-Realization. This There was Mike Robinson of the London Broadcasting Corporation, which has a very grand name, but it wasn't very such a big company. So he was interviewing Srila Prabhupada, and in answer to one of his questions, Srila Prabhupada had one of his disciples read from Bhagavad Gita as it is. So the disciple, I believe it was Harikesh Maharaj, read out the verse, Na jayate mriyate va kada chin nayang bhutva bhavita va nabhuyaha ajo nityang shashvato yang purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. And then Prabhupada had him read the translation, which, all right, I'll read the translation also, as it appears in Bhagavad Gita as it is. So here's the translation. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. So this was in answer to one of Mike Robinson's questions. Then Mike Robinson asked a question about the scriptures. He said, well, you're quoting scriptures. So he asked about the nature of scriptures. And Srila Prabhupada gave an example. He said, just like this microphone. Srila Prabhupada was speaking into a microphone. He said that when you purchase a microphone, you also get a manual which explains what is the purpose of the microphone, how to operate it, how to maintain it in the best way so that it functions properly and you can get the benefit from it. So Srila Prabhupada said that just like in the creation, there is a creator and he gives us a manual. That is called the scriptures, which describes what is the purpose of the creation and how we can... I'm paraphrasing what Srila Prabhupada said. We can look it up in the Veda base. The manual of the scriptures tell us what is the purpose of the creation and how we can live within this creation in a manner that we can get the best possible result from living within it. So this knowledge was given to Brahma, who is a devotee of Krishna, highly enlightened soul, who created this world, but this world would have been useless or pointless if there had been no preaching of Vedic knowledge, or if the Vedic knowledge was not applied within human society. So Brahma received this knowledge and he imparted it to his sons, and they further imparted the knowledge to others, and various branches of Vedic knowledge sprung up. We'll find that various parts of the Vedic knowledge sprung from various parts of Lord Brahma's body that was first impregnated within the heart by Krishna, who is the knower of the Vedas and the object of knowledge in the Vedas. And he has given this knowledge within human society so that we can live within this world according to his directions and ultimately understand him. So without this Vedic knowledge, we have no means to understand what is the purpose of the world. So this Vedic knowledge is divulged in human society. It is actually only meant to be distributed among the Brahmanas. We're distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. But traditionally it was considered sinful even to write the Vedas. What to speak? That was considered sinful. Because the Vedas are not to be written, they're only to be spoken. It's handed down in verbal parampara. Speaking, repeating, the brahmacharis, they hear, they repeat, they remember, and then in the next generation they teach it. And this way it's handed down. They're very stringent systems by which the Vedic knowledge is passed down. Or the Vedic, not just talking about the Vedic knowledge, but the Vedas. That is only supposed to be discussed within the society of the twice born, especially the Brahmanas and to some extent the Kshatriyas. And the Vaishyas, maybe just a little. So anyway, we're distributing these books. It's a different age. And the Vedic, not the original Vedas, are not lost. Much of them is lost. But the purport of this again, Jiva Goswami in Takva Sandarbha points out that much of the Vedas, original Vedas, are lost in the modern age. And even though some people, there are still some family lines of Brahmanas in India even today who continue this system of teaching to their sons and disciples, the Vedic knowledge, or the Vedas, not the Vedic knowledge, the Vedas according to the traditional systems. But the proper understanding of that has not been maintained. So therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam is more important in Kali Yuga than the original Vedas. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled for people of Kali Yuga who all fall within the category of Stri Shudra Dvijabandhu Nam Traina Veda Gochara. Then three categories: women, Shudras, and the fallen descendants of the Brahmanas. All are not capable of understanding the Vedas. So the Mahabharata was composed for people who are attracted to stories, and in this way they can be gradually attracted to the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence or the most important part of Mahabharata. And for those who want to go further, or are fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go further, to discuss the topics of Bhagavad Gita further, there is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this knowledge, which is in Srimad Bhagavatam, is the same knowledge that was imparted within the heart by Lord Krishna, Narayana, to Brahma. We find there's the that is described, the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam has been presented in various ways and various times and various places, in various forms, sometimes very short, just like the Chatushloki Bhagavatam is very short, four shlokas. Here we have Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses. Jiva Goswami writes that in the heavenly planets, I believe it's 100,000 verses, maybe more, Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam it doesn't mean that it's a constantly changing scripture, but just that certain parts are available or revealed at certain times within certain societies, according to the will of the Lord. So this knowledge, this point, it's the same knowledge. It's the same knowledge. It's not that the Param Satya was different previously, or that it's changing, or as this modern, actually it's not a modern idea, but it's popular in the modern age, that everyone has their own truth. Truth is what according to what you perceive it to be. It's a matter of opinion, but it's not a matter of opinion. This Vedic knowledge means that which is fixed. It is not a matter of opinion, but it is a matter of understanding what is the truth. We are relative to the absolute truth. Krishna is the absolute reality. Krishna is the ultimate reality. We are relative to Him. His existence does not depend upon us. Some people say, well, you can believe or not believe, it's up to you. So it's not that if you believe in Krishna, He will exist, and if you don't believe, He won't exist. I used to believe in God, but my life was miserable, and everything went wrong, so I thought, what was the use in believing in God? And I stopped believing. It didn't make any difference. So that proves there's no God. If there had actually been a God, He would have bashed me on the head for stopping believing in Him. So that proves there's no God. These are very foolish ideas. We are dependent on Him. His existence is the source of all existence. We are Anu Chaitana. He is Vibhu Chaitana. We are conscious, He is conscious. We are very small, He is very great. This should be understandable. And it's just like yesterday someone was asking in a program in Rijeka, that, well, if these things, he was asking, well, if these things are so clear that life is miserable, why don't people understand? So I rephrased the question for him, why are we all so stupid? That's the actual question. Maybe he was trying to put it in such a way to say that, well, it can't be true, because why doesn't everyone accept it? But actually it's a fact. We are stupid. Why are we so stupid that we can't understand these things? We take ourselves so seriously. We think ourselves to be so important. Well, I believe in God. So, that's good luck for God. I decided not to believe in God, so God has to, you know, start crying and say, please, please, believe in me. And no. Then needs it. God is dead. So, we are not the center. Believe it or not, folks, we are not the center of reality. People ask us, what do you... Isn't that a common thing people ask you? What do you believe? They put so much emphasis, what do you believe? Whenever people ask me this, even before they ask me, what do you think about? I don't even listen to the rest of what they say. I tell them, it doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what I believe. It doesn't matter what anyone believes, because we're all tiny little beings. We're, as Srila Prabhupada would say, it is not a question of belief. It is a matter of what is the fact, what is the truth, what is reality. But this idea is there. What do you believe? As if this is very important. You're flattering someone by asking him, what do you believe? I'm kind of interested in what you believe. Doesn't mean I'm going to believe it, but it's interesting to know what, you know, why you're jumping around with that funny paint on your forehead. What do you believe? It's not a question of belief. The Shastra is not presented as a matter of belief. It is presented as fact. Vyasadeva doesn't write, in my opinion, Janmadhya Sayaton Vyad. It's not Vyasadeva's opinion, it is fact. Vyasadeva is self-realized. He knows what is reality and is presenting that for the benefit of others who want to understand what is reality. This is not meant for people who value their own intelligence as the definitive factor. The question, why are we so stupid? The answer is ahankar. Massive, foolish overestimation of ourselves. That is called ahankar, egoism. I am not important. I am not the center. Krishna is the center. The Supreme Truth, who is Krishna, he is the center. This is presented by Vyasadeva. He doesn't say, in my opinion. Sometimes it's stated, the word ahuhu, the word is given. Even Krishna himself, Rishibhya, Bahudha Gitam, Chandobhya Vividhai Pritak, Brahma Sutra Padais Chayeva, Hetu Madhya Vinishchitai. Sometimes Krishna himself quotes that the various rishis and various shastras state this knowledge of cause and effect in various ways. So sometimes it's quoted that rishis say like this, or the shastras state like that. But then it's stated that rishis say like this. It's not stated that anyone, not you know, some drunkard off the street said this, and therefore we have to take his opinion very seriously. But we it's quoted, Vyasa Uvacha, Devala Uvacha, Asita Uvacha, Narada Uvacha. These persons are quoted. These are accepted tattva-darshis, persons who have seen the truth. The word of Vyas, the word of Narada, the word of Asita, Devala, these are all equally authoritative because they all speak of the same truth, the same reality. It doesn't change in course of time. There are many rishis, many munis, who have many different opinions. But those who are seers of the truth, they do not differ in their opinion. And therefore, what Vyasadeva is presenting, he is presenting that knowledge which was revealed by Lord Krishna within the heart to Brahma, the same knowledge, many millions of years later, Vyasadeva recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam. In terms of relative time, our position in time is almost the same as that of Vyasadeva's compared to the time when Krishna spoke the knowledge to Brahma within his heart. It was a long, long time between Brahma speaking the knowledge to Brahma and Vyasadeva writing it down. And there's 5,000 years, isn't that much difference between that the time of Brahma speaking, of Brahma being enlightened, and Vyasadeva writing it down. But it's the same knowledge. Brahma spoke to Narad, and Narad gave the inspiration to Vyas. That knowledge which Vyas, of course, already knows, but Narad gave him the clue that now you have to write on the Satyam Param. You have to write in a manner. You have to present this in an unadulterated, explicit manner. Present the Vedyam Vastavam. You've written all these Vedas, and now what is the actual point? You didn't write it. You gave all these Vedas, which are all meant for understanding Krishna, but you didn't write any scripture which explicitly describes the Supreme Absolute Truth as Krishna. So that truth was revealed within the heart by Lord Krishna himself to Brahma, and the same truth is being propagated in human society even today. Srila Prabhupada gave his books with the original Sanskrit, word for word translation, verse translation, and purport, just to show that this is this, to show that it's nothing new. People are always looking for in philosophy and science, people are always looking for something new, some new idea. But the glory of Srila Prabhupada and the glory of all the acharyas, and the point that Prabhupada wanted to emphasize, that this isn't new and therefore it is authoritative. Something new means you're just presenting some new stool for people to smell, that's all. In the name of philosophy, some new ideas to toss around in your contaminated mind without ever coming to any conclusion. This is what they call philosophy. You just juggle some ideas around and try to be intellectual and talk some big words, and you get some satisfaction out of this. Very low, very pathetic level of satisfaction. But the acharyas, they're not such superficial personalities that they simply want to make some intellectual jugglery to impress others. They're not in the slightest bit interested in impressing others. They simply want to serve Krishna. So they present, here is knowledge. This is the same thing that was spoken millions of years ago. There's this idea, millions of years ago. Well, that means it's primitive or out of date. No. Why was Srila Prabhupada so much against this evolutionary theory? The implication of this evolutionary... Well, there are various reasons why Prabhupada was against it. The first reason is it was totally bogus. It's wrong. It's untrue. But the... An effect of the evolutionary theory is the idea that human civilization is always progressing. We're getting more and more advanced knowledge, and we're discovering things which we never knew before, which means that in the past people didn't really know anything. And whatever what they called knowledge in the past was not really knowledge at all. What we have now is knowledge. Of course, we know it's going to change. But what we have now, that's the highest knowledge. But no, that is not knowledge. Knowledge means that which is always true. And here we have knowledge which was imparted at the time of creation, and it's unchanged, and it's still extant, and it is still the same reality, and it will always be the same reality, because it's a fact, it's a fact, it's a fact. And these are facts that don't change. 1 + 1 = 2. That is, at least on the mundane platform, that's always true. If you bring one, if you have one apple and then you bring another apple, then you have two apples. You cannot change that to 1 + 1 = 3. So it's a fact. It's a fact of matter. There are certain facts even on the relative platform. That is unchangeable. I mean, you just can't do math. If someone says that, well, I want to introduce opinionation into arithmetic, then there's no mathematics, because you can't. Someone in my mathematics, I say 1 + 1 = 3, and someone else can say 1 + 1 = 5, and then how are you going to calculate anything? Then what's the point of mathematics? And then all the symmetry of numbers, and nothing works. The same example I gave last night. Build a bridge. Try building a bridge with your own arithmetic. And who will allow you to build a bridge? Building bridges rests on physics, which rests on mathematics, which rests on arithmetic. So if you get your calculations all wrong, and you put the, not enough concrete or steel, or not enough strong steel, and the bridge it'll collapse. You may not even be able to finish building it in the first place. So there are certain facts of the world, there are certain facts of reality. And even if you go back millions of years in time, 1 + 1 will be 2. It won't be 3. Or not even 1.100001. 1 plus 1 equals 2. So the fact of reality is imparted within the heart to Brahma by Krishna, and having received this knowledge, Brahma recited what we have now, Brahma Sanghita. He saw that reality and lauded Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This fifth chapter of Bhagavatam, of Brahma Samhita, is a summation of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. We're supposed to have arati at 6:30? 7 o'clock. Oh, I was heading for 6:30. Who said? What's going on? I thought it was 6:30. Yeah, 6:30. Okay. All right, this session is finished. And more tomorrow. It's exciting. Discussing this exaltation, Vyasadeva's exaltation of Lord Krishna. It's enlivening. At least I find it enlivening. And I hope you will too. This is Kirtan. Hare Krishna. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlightened Brahma from within the heart with this Vedic knowledge. Hare Krishna.